Between the 1940s and 1970s, the U.S. experienced social upheaval on a mass scale. In this crucible of change and activism emerged the civil rights movement. The descendants of black slaves from Africa were now fighting for the general equality afforded them as citizens of the United States.
End of second-class citizenship. The right to vote. The right to be able to go to the Holiday Inn. That was a hotel here in Clarksville. The right to go to the Holiday Inn and be able to sit down at that in that restaurant and eat without being harassed. The right to go to the doctor's office without having to go to black section, white section. The right to go to that Greyhound bus station and not be have to go to the back of the bus, and to be recognized as a human being or as a person. Myself, you know, first class citizen.
Because of the enormous sacrifices made by those involved, many laws enforcing racial discrimination and oppression were purged from the books, allowing, in theory, for institutional equality. Though the civil rights movement could never cure all of the racism and inequality hidden in the folds of American society, it did open the way for future generations of blacks to achieve things that Americans centuries ago could never have imagined. Because of its unique symbolic significance and horrendous record of white-on-black violence, Mississippi in the 1960s became one of the central battlegrounds in the struggle for civil rights.
After Reconstruction in the late 19th century, the American South entered a period in history categorized by rampant racism and the rise of hostile forms of discrimination, segregation, and violence towards the Afro-American community by Southern whites. Consequently, blacks were left to the will of Jim Crow, a system enacted by white Southern state legislatures to ensure the disenfranchisement of Afro-Americans economically and politically. Jim Crow laws rendered blacks second-class citizens, segregating them from whites in public facilities, restaurants, public schools, public transportation, restrooms, and essentially every other part of society. Under Jim Crow, blacks were kept at the bottom of society through brutal methods, most notably lynching.
My uncle was lynched by the Klansmen. As a matter of fact, he had just gotten out of service and had been drinking, ended up on the wrong side of town. And he was beaten beyond recognition. Matter of fact, the only way they were able to tell who he was or identify him, he had his name in his army boots. And after that, you know, that's when it starts setting in, you know, on what's going on. And then, you know, it gets to the point where you're old enough to realize that a change needs to come.
In order to survive under such repressive conditions, blacks, especially black men, were taught from an early age what they could and could not do regarding whites.
My grandmother, as I said, would always teach me my place. And she would always tell me what the white folk will do to you if you don't stay in your place. And she'd tell me stories about guys who said something to a white man, said something back to a white man, or did something to a white man, and what they did to him, how the mobs came and took him out of his house. And I, in my lifetime, there was a man who the mob came and got out of his house at night and killed him. They found his body some weeks later. Yeah. So, I mean, that was, hey, that wasn't anything special. That was commonplace. I mean, that's what they did.
Education, or rather, the ways it was institutionally denied to blacks through state law, was one of the most pressing issues facing Afro-Americans in the struggle. The attainment of equal rights in education was seen by many as the first step towards freedom and general social equality for blacks.
On May 17, 1954, in the case of Brown versus the Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, the United States Supreme Court ruled segregation of schools to be unconstitutional. This was a turning point in the fight for civil rights because the ruling overturned the Blessy versus Ferguson verdict, which established the segregationist status quo of separate but equal doctrine. African Americans began to see the phasing out of legal segregation on the horizon, which inspired hope within the community. It was effectively one of the first major victories of the civil rights movement. That said, the event that had the most significance in mobilizing people and making the struggle a mass movement was not the Supreme Court ruling, but rather the murder of a black teenager in Mississippi. After allegedly making a pass at a white woman, Emmett Lewis Till was brutally killed in Money, Mississippi on August 28, 1955 by local white Southerners. Till, a Chicago, Illinois native, was only 14 years old at the time of his death. Not familiar with the strict racial caste system in Mississippi or the behavior expected of blacks there, he unknowingly fell prey to the violent brand of racism exercised in the South at the time. After his mutilated corpse was made open to the public to stand as a testament to the brutality of Jim Crow, the murder drew immense public criticism from around the country, mobilizing many and, in effect, sparking a new period of the civil rights movement as a mass struggle.
Influenced in part by traditions of nonviolence from Gandhi, Quakerism, and traditional Afro-American Christianity, the civil rights movement utilized forms of direct action and civil disobedience to combat discrimination and segregation. Members participated in sit-ins, boycotts, freedom rides, marches, legal recourse, and voter registration drives to galvanize their efforts against racism. Many participants attribute the success of the civil rights movement to the nonviolent tactics used to achieve equality. The church played perhaps the biggest role in the movement, acting as not only a place for recruitment and organization, but also as a cohesive for the movement. As such, it was often targeted by white supremacists.
They were having a meeting one night at one of the local churches, and someone threw a Molotov cocktail through the window. And the church was full, and my dad picked up the Molotov cocktail and threw it back out of the window. That was just some of the things, and one of the things that happened during the civil rights era that people were subjected to. You know, and that wasn't anything unusual. That was just a form and a tactic of intimidation and threat. So,
in another front in the fight for civil rights, SNCC, or the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, came into rural Mississippi early in the 1960s to help blacks register to vote. Facing strong opposition and little outside aid, SNCC decided on a revolutionary new method in the fight for civil rights. They brought in hundreds of mostly white, socially conscious college students from across the country, an action designed in part to draw attention from the media and an American white elite now more involved with the struggle than ever through their children. This influx of hundreds of white students brought newfound national attention to the struggle in Mississippi. It also drew a virulently militant response from a segment of the white community as a new, secretive organization called the White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan was formed in response to the increased presence of outside activists registering blacks to vote in Mississippi. The White Knights carried out a number of attacks, including the murder of three members of SNCC, an act that drew nationwide attention to the civil rights struggle in Mississippi.
Out of the work conducted by SNCC emerged the MFDP, or Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which drove to the 1964 Democratic National Convention in Atlantic City. Comprised of major grassroots activists like Fannie Lou Hamer and Aaron Henry, the MFDP sought to unseat the Mississippi delegation of the Democratic Party, citing the fact that it wasn't democratically elected due to the fact that blacks were systematically prevented from voting in the state. The Democratic leadership didn't want to lose the Dixiecrats, their traditional base of white support in the South, but they didn't want to alienate the black vote either. In the end, they settled on a compromise that neither side liked. The Dixiecrats weren't unseated, but the MFDP was given two at-large seats, which gave them no actual say at the convention. The Dixiecrats protested by walking out on the convention, and the failure of the MFDP to gain representation disillusioned many civil rights activists.
Regardless of setbacks, however, by the late 1960s and early 70s, institutionalized segregation had finally become defunct through the efforts of those involved in the movement. Afro-Americans all over the country, but especially in places like rural Mississippi, experienced the elation of hard-earned freedoms. These experiences still live in the memories of those who saw it.
Look, I can remember when, as a result of the movement, I can remember the first person to work in one of the downtown stores. I can remember the first black man to be put on the police force. I can remember I was one of the first ones to eat at the Holiday Inn restaurant. That was as a result of working at Immaculate Conception School. I worked with the nuns, they were white nuns, and after the law had been passed, that, you know, the Civil Rights Act law had been passed, I remember a sister telling me, honey, we're going to try out this new law. She said, we're going to the Holiday Inn and we're going to have dinner. So, oh Lord, sister, not me. She said, yes, honey. Sister was from out east. Yes, honey. We went to the Holiday Inn, and when we walked in, I was the only black in there, and all of these people were just looking at me. I was so nervous, I could not eat. Sister asked, relax, told me at least, relax. I said, sister, I said, they are looking at me. She said, you're okay.